Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
From something that I wrote the other day, Fulfilling Your Heart's Desire. As with many anniversaries in life, a birthday gives time for reflection. Like an eagle flying high above, sees a person down below and can look far back, know where the person is now, and can gaze forward to see what is to come. I've had the privilege of God showing me many of my past incarnations. Like a light switch thrown and a room lit up, a revelation can be given in which the gist of a whole lifetime can be given in an instant, or perhaps just a significant moment is seen. When it is God who is showing you, whatever is shown will relate to something you are going through in that moment, and it is given to you to help release you from the past. So I can look back to many experiences that have all gone into making me who I am today. And not all of them are good or perfect, but then some of them show signs of compassion and clarity. In what I have been given, there has been more suffering than overcoming. That is because it is those things that I have done wrong or have traumatized me that have held me back. In order to be released from these things that follow me from lifetime to lifetime, I must absorb the lesson intended, not always the one I learned at the time. Perhaps the greatest revelation that has come from these experiences is that the law of cause and effect, the boomerang of karma, is not meant as punishment, but rather it occurs to teach compassion. If I do something despicable to another without real consideration for how that action affects them, then these same actions will be visited upon me. When they come to me, I understand what suffering is produced by that action. When this happens enough, I will see myself in the happiness or suffering of all others, for no one is a stranger to me. There is nothing another does that I have not done, in some version, and there is no pain another may have that has not been mine at some time. My vision becomes universalized. This is the lesson of compassion my past has taught me. In the present, I am just reading the newly published Cross and Lotus Journal, after having gone through it many times when proofing it. In reading Mother's Easter talk, I find myself carried into her living presence. Her words, thoughts, and spiritual experiences are not just reacting in my brain, but through my whole being. She is telling my story. At the time she gave the talk, she was showing me the way. Now, as I read her words, she is telling the way that I have come. When Mother ordained me as a Yogacharya, she said that I had been through nearly all the experiences she had been through. I was quite surprised when she said that. What was very important in her statement was nearly. And in fact, there were many experiences yet to go through, some of them unimaginable to me at the time. I think for the most part, it is best for us not to know everything we will have to go through beforehand. However, through those experiences, I am now able to enjoy a communion with God that does, as Sri Yukteswar said it would, fulfill my heart's desire. I melt in gratitude to God and Guru for making this possible. I know in every cell of my being that God experience is the source of every happiness, and it is separation from Him that makes suffering. My soul melts and merges with Him, then He reanimates me to serve Him in all forms. It is all His play. This I know. Looking forward, I only know that there is much work to do. I know with every fiber of my being that Mother's words, the truth that came at such a high price, must go out in order to help this world to change. She speaks to all the Christian world, telling them of the original teachings and meaning of Jesus. She also bridges the teachings of Jesus to reach out to every man, woman, and child the world over, those belonging to every religion. For she tells a story with universal significance. This world stands on the verge of becoming more universal. We see signs of it everywhere. And yet, the oppositional forces do not go quietly. Dedicated souls must first tread the way themselves, and then be willing to share the light now shining through their forms. I see a world that tempers individuality, competition, and striving with compassion, internally derived joy, and universal vision. God proves through nature He loves individual expression. As Divine Mother manifests through so many different kinds of flowers, so much beauty, so many colors, and outrageous patterns, so she must love her individuality in humanity. When we realize that every individual is part of one complete puzzle, and for the picture to be complete, no piece of the puzzle can be discarded or treated with disrespect, then we will have taken a giant step forward to universalizing our vision. So, as the eagle swoops earthward, and on this day that I ostensibly celebrate my birth, the birth of a body that is simply one of many this soul is inhabited, I wish that all of your heart's desire be fulfilled. And I do happen to know a secret. Realizing God will satisfy your every heart's desire completely. I'd like to read from Isaiah 40, chapter 40. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received the Lord's hand double for all of her sins. A voice of one calling in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway of our God. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all people will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. A voice says, cry out. And I said, what shall I cry? All the people are like grass, and all their faithfulness is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass, the grass withers and the flowers fall. But the word of our God endures forever. You who bring good news to Zion, go up on a mountain high. You who bring good news to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up. Do not be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and he rules with a mighty arm. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those who have young. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? He who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales, and the hills in a balance? Who can fathom the Spirit of the Lord, or instruct the Lord as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him? Who taught him the right way? Who was it who taught him knowledge, or showed him the path of understanding? Surely the nations are like a drop in the bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were fine dust. Lebanon is not sufficient for altar fires, nor its animals enough for burnt offerings. Before him, all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. With whom then will you compare God? To what image will you liken him? As for an idol, a metal worker casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and fashions silver chains for it. A person too poor to present such an offering selects wood that will not rot. They look for a skilled worker to set up an idol that will not topple. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens who created all these. He who brings out the starry host one by one, and calls forth each one of them by name, because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my cause is disregarded by my God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. These are tremendous words from Isaiah, and they paint a picture. They paint a picture for us of our relationship with this world. And in thinking of a lifetime and soaring up as an eagle and see with the eyes that stretch far in the past, looking far into the future, it is best that we do this at times so that we do not get caught up in the little mounds and molehills that we are sometimes climbing that seem to be so all-powerful, that seem to be obstacles in our path, because when we let our vision stretch forward, we can see that city as a light shining upon a hill. And we can see that we are inevitably being drawn in that direction. And how wonderful that is, how powerful that is, that we let our faith, we let our vision grow and expand to the point where it takes us beyond the little things of this world, the little things of our life, and that can even mean the health, the life itself of this body. For we have had many lives, we have many times. I remember once when I was given a vision by God, an experience really. You have to understand that when true visions come from God, it's an entire experience. It's not just something that you see, as a vision might imply. It's something that you feel down to the very depths and core of your being. And so I saw where I had spent this lifetime, and I had come into the lifetime very much intending to want to make spiritual progress. As I was leaving the body, I was lifted up, and I reviewed this life with this great being of light next to me. And as Mother described, that is the very self-same Christ consciousness that is within me, that is residing next to me, reviewing with me the life, and letting me know what I did well and what I did not do well. Well, I didn't even need that being of light to tell me that I had fallen far short of the goal that I intended for myself in that lifetime. I had come into it wanting to make this progress, but I had gotten caught up, as many of us do, in all of the things of this world, all of the things that grab our attention, make us think that that's all important at the time, and we completely lose sight of what we came to do. This is a tremendous lesson, because as I reviewed my life at that time, I was so upset with myself. But what it did is it made me absolutely determined that given another opportunity, given another life, that I did not want to forget. I did not want to lose sight of why I had come into this life. And so a firm determination came to me at that time. And even though my conscious mind was not able to remember it, there is something deep in my unconscious mind that spurred me on towards spiritual growth, even when I didn't understand it, even when I didn't consciously want it. And it was at least in part through grace of God and Guru, but it was also because I had made that determination. I thought I'd read to you from Papa's description on Swami Ramdas on himself regarding his own awakening. First, God created in his servant, Ramdas' heart, a keen longing to realize him. Ramdas looked upon God as his master and mother, and upon himself as a servant and a child. His one great desire was to see him, to realize him, and to feel his presence. And God taught him to take his name constantly in order to purify his mind, because the pure mind alone can see him. The relationship between Ramdas and God was established by the power of the name. And when it was established, God's grace, light, peace, purity, and joy entered him. The holy name kept up a continuous contact between God and Ramdas. He went on repeating the name and found it sweeter than nectar. He began to drink it day after day until he was merged in the divine consciousness. In that state, the servant became one with the master and the child became one with the mother. Ramdas started on the path as a servant of God, remembered him constantly, and did everything as he prompted him to do. By following his guidance, Ramdas was able to purify his mind and make himself fit to know, to know him completely. But when a state of oneness was reached, the sense of duality of servant and master disappeared. He came and whispered in Ramdas' ear, "You and I are one." At a certain stage, the distinction between yourself and the divine master disappears, and you feel oneness with him. Then you have the joy and peace which passes understanding. You cannot express what it is like. You are merged in an ocean of bliss, an infinite ocean of bliss. His struggle at first was to keep God thought for 24 hours without break. He gave up sleep in those days as he was afraid that by going to sleep, he might forget God. He reduced his food to a minimum so that he would not be overcome by laziness and sleep. He regulated his conduct of life in such a way that a stream of God thought ran unbroken in his mind. He wanted to love God and God alone. If anything was done, it was done with this end in view. The spirit in which actions were done was conducive to the remembrance of God. While aspiring for purity, we should not engage ourselves in impure actions. At the time Ram Dass is speaking of, he had other responsibilities. There were people around him, and he was treating them as he would treat anybody else, with all love and kindness. Later on, he was not able to earn anything. When God took him completely to himself, the work he was doing dropped off. God said, "You are mine altogether. Go about and talk to people so that they may also come into contact with me." Ram Dass then went around the whole of India. And so Papa summarizes here all of his journey, all of his struggles, everything that he went through in order to refine and purify the mind to the point where God remembrance was all that he had. This can come in various ways. Mother summed it up by saying, keep your mind upon God. But singing to God, thinking of him, repeating his name over and over, that may sound strange to some people. But when Mother first taught me Ram Nam, the first time I came to a service was on a Wednesday night, and she used to sit at the harmonium and sing Ram Nam and lead us in it. And at first, when I heard the melody that she taught us, I found it rather haunting, and I wasn't sure whether I liked it. But I couldn't forget it. And it started repeating itself in my mind, and it took itself up. And the more I repeated it, I felt peace. I felt joy. I started to feel the presence of God more and more and more. Now, Papa says that you can take up any name of God. He told the story of one man who wanted to get initiation from a guru. There was one who was living near his town, but he felt that he was unqualified to take initiation from a guru. And yet he yearned for it with all of his heart. So one day, he snuck out to the guru's ashram, and he crept closer and closer in through the jungles there until he got close enough to he could hear, but he was not seen. And through the course of the conversation, the master mentioned the word pestle as the only thing that he could pick out, like a mortar and pestle. And so he thought, oh, I have received initiation now from my guru. And he started chanting this name, Pestle, Pestle, Pestle. But he did it with great faith. He had been given it to him by his guru. He was initiated. Everything, God himself, became this pestle. So it is said in the story that the man became so imbued with that that eventually he merged his consciousness into God consciousness. And a golden pestle came down from heaven and took this man up into heavenly consciousness. Isn't that a delightful story? And Papa used it as an illustration. In one way, it doesn't make any difference what name you use. It's the faith that you imbue it with. And so by giving that total faith and understanding, I had a young man came to me who lived at an Anandashram. And he was very attracted to Jesus and used to listen to Christian radio and loved that path. And he didn't feel that he could accept the Ram Nam as his focus was on Jesus. And he asked initiation of me. And so I instructed him as in the pilgrim's way, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on my soul. But his English was not so good, and it seemed like it was too difficult for him to master all of that. So I just gave him, Lord Jesus Christ, Lord Jesus Christ, Lord Jesus Christ, and just repeat that only. And so 3-4 days, and he came back and he said, I am just in bliss all the time repeating this word now, Lord Jesus Christ. And there was just such a light about him, and he was just obviously uplifted and feeling so much God at that time. So we take the name of God. We take anything that we have faith in, anything that draws us so perfectly into union with God. And we repeat that because we have to think of something, don't we? You can try to make the mind blank, but just try. It's impossible. Even if you try to think of a blank, you think of some concept of a blank. You think of being out in dark space someplace. You create an image of it. So as long as we're functioning in the mind, we're always going to have a subject and an object. We're the subject. There's an object of our thought. So why not give it the name of God? Why not give it the concept of God? Whatever inspires you, whatever makes you feel close to God. And so that mother had given me this chant, Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And as Master explains, when he wrote his chants, he would sing them to God until he was lifted up and merged into God consciousness through that chant. And he would say, I have divinized the chant in this way. And it is like if you are out in the wilderness someplace and you try bushwhacking through some thick underbrush and trees, and it's really a tough time. And if you don't know where you're going, if there's no trail, you can come to the edge of a cliff. You don't necessarily find the right way to go at all. In fact, the likelihood is you'll get lost and you'll have a very rough time of it. But if you follow a path that has already been made and somebody has found the most direct route to get there, how much easier, safer, conducive it is to follow that path. So these great spiritual masters have hewn these paths through the jungle of all the things that the mind and the senses can come up with. And they say, follow this path. Chant the name of God, said Mother. Practice Kriya Yoga faithfully. Think of God always, and you will be taken directly to the source. Don't veer to the left or the right. Just go directly there. And if you will follow my instructions, then you will arrive at the path. Now, there were many people who were with Mother who came into spiritual experiences. They had the eruption of the Kundalini. I talked to many Swamis and many different spiritual guides in India. And what can you tell me about the Kundalini? And not one of them had had any experience in the Kundalini itself. Didn't mean that they weren't sincere, didn't mean that they weren't following a spiritual path, but they had no knowledge, they had no experience. And it made me realize what a gift we had with Mother. What a powerful gift. How many she started in on those experiences. And some were lifted up very high, but very few, carried it all the way to its conclusion. There are so many things that you get caught up with. In the most recent journal, Mother is talking about the 30 pieces of silver that Judas received when he betrayed the Christ. And she described the inner meaning of this. You have the 10 qualities of the mind, and the 10 qualities of mind are based on the sensory experiences that we have. It's the 5 senses, and then it's the 5 receptors in the brain for all those senses. And that as you go through this mystical crucifixion, the Kundalini comes up through the spine. And as it does so, it comes up through each one of these spinal centers that are all along the spine. And each center represents a different stage of consciousness and will trigger both the positive and the negative. The positive is that uplifting force, that purifying force within you. The negative is the draw back into ego consciousness, back into body consciousness. And so as you go up, you first start the mystical crucifixion at the heart center. Because as you stand with your feet together and your arms outstretched, Mother instructed, you make the form of the cross. Your outstretched arms are in the form of the horizontal. And that represents those forces of the worldly consciousness and physical consciousness that you have to overcome. The vertical consciousness is coming up the spine with the kundalini. And it is that power within the spine that is drawing you upwards. And so you will meet all of those things that you've done in your outward journey from God. This is absolutely what you must go through. Many people get into these experiences and they get caught up by these things of the opposing force. And they think perhaps they've done something terribly wrong. Now, perhaps they did take their mind off God. They became too lackadaisical. That's possible. But the other side of it is also, you absolutely have to encounter those things. These tests will come to you. And so at the heart center is the physical body and all of the things of the physical body. And you are taken up to that center. And when you are encountered there, all of the things of the senses will call to you. And they will rise up and they will try to draw you back. Now, this is picturesquely described in so many ways through the scriptures. And one of it is all the opposition that Jesus came up against. Sometimes people wanted to do him harm. They wanted to kill him for what he was teaching. And so he had to overcome all of these things. And so do we. And so do we. It is said that he vicariously paid for all the sins of this world. But you would think, logically, that if that were true, and you accepted him, then all of your sins would be effaced and you would not have to deal with anything of the negative at all. You would just be on track with God and Christ only. But we see that that's not true. Really, acceptance and belief in God is the beginning of the journey. It's not the end. So we have to go through these experiences. So as we do and we overcome these things, we rise up above we go through the first mystical crucifixion, we rise up above it. But the memory of what the senses and all of the temptations still resides. And this is the first 10 of the 30 pieces of silver. And those things call back to us. So we really have to be careful. We have to be very, very scrupulous not to let our mind wander in the wrong direction, because the moment we do, we start feeding life energy, but not just ordinary life energy. Now, we have this increased life energy from the kundalini, which makes the oppositional force even more powerful. Isn't that interesting? So the temptation becomes more powerful. And so we rise up into that next level, and then we take on the next mystical crucifixion, which happens at the throat center, and that is the astral or the electrical body. And once we rise above that, then we have to encounter the memory of all of those temptations as well. That's the next 10 pieces of silver. And then we rise up into the causal or the idea body. And once we transcend that, we run into the last 10 pieces of silver. And that is the memory of all of those experiences as well. So once we purify all of that and go through all of that, we, what Mother calls, goes over the top. And you are now freed from any of those temptations. You are not drawn back into the lower senses. You still have a body. You still operate in this world. But you don't have the same kind of work, the same kind of temptation that you've had in this upward ascension. But we have to be careful about this. I just read where there's a very popular yoga, Hatha yoga teacher, and he's being sued by all these different women, and he's being accused of rape and all kinds of things, and whether he's guilty or not, that will be decided later, but he's being accused of these things, and we see a lot of examples of that. So we have to be very scrupulous as we go up, and there are many who were with Mother who were in these experiences, and sexual energy was very much a temptation that came to them. And some of them were drawn back into the body, you might say with a vengeance, when they gave in to it. And it became all-consuming for them. So this is something that we have to, it's very real. We have to be ready for it. And when it comes, that we keep our mind of God, that we're chanting God's name, that we're, as Papa says here, we cannot be thinking that we're seeking out God and doing the wrong things, doing the wrong activities. The two do not go together. So we must become very, very clear on that in our minds. But what happens when we do all of these things? We become freed beings. A Jivan Mukta is one who has become freed even while still living in the body. This is one of the great things that India has to teach us in yoga. This can all occur even now. And it was part of original Christianity, you know? The original Christians really weren't interested in forming churches. They weren't interested in the political structure. And for the first 300 years, you saw some of it, but you didn't see much evidence of it. They were sincere aspirants, many of them who were living separate from the world. They were living out in the desert. They were living in different enclaves. And they just were going about their own practice. They didn't see themselves as part of a worldwide movement. Jesus had promised his second coming as being imminent. And some of them understood exactly what that meant. Others, there was some confusion. Even while Jesus was living with his own direct disciples, they would misunderstand. He would talk in symbolic ways and they would take him literally. And he would get very frustrated with them. And he'd say, how long do I have to live with this evil generation? Don't you people get it? I'm talking in symbolic ways. You're taking me in such a literal kind of a way. And then, of course, as God once humorously told me, where two or more are gathered, there shall be politics. And so, of course, devotees would start vying with each other. Who's the greatest one? Oh, Lord, when you're taken up into heaven, who's going to be at your right hand? And so on. And you know, he had an answer for them. And he said, whoever is the greatest servant among you, who serves his fellow mankind, that one shall be greatest. Self-effacement, getting rid of this ego. And who can say that they are great in God? Only God is great. Only God is great. And here is the interesting thing, is that as you rise up in God, you feel that, you know that deep in yourself. There is no competition at that point. There is only God, the feeling of God, the transcendence of God, the upliftment of God, the purity of God. That becomes all-consuming for you. You don't want anything else. And you absolutely know yourself to be nothing. Really, it's not an assumed kind of posture of the ego, oh, I'm going to try to be humble. And some people do that. They make sure that they're at the back of the line. They make sure that everybody else gets to be taken care of. But it's actually the pseudo-spiritual self, the one who's trying to be humble. But it's an ego, and there's a secret pride that goes behind that. The humility that comes with God realization is something that's natural. You just know inside yourself that you are nothing. And if somebody tries to give you something or tries to compliment you, it just simply goes straight to God, because you know if there's anything good in you, it comes from God. And so this is the nature, as when you are lifted up on as with wings of eagles. I'd like to read from you a wonderful book by disciple of Master's. Her name, given to her by Master, was Kamala. And this comes from the Flawless Mirror. Our Guru has helped devotees prepare for spiritual plantings, spiritual plantings with the motor plow of scientific yoga methods. He said, "The disciples who steadfastly nurture the seeds of meditation will see them grow into a great tree of realization, and others will then come to bask in the shade of their peace. The many disciples throughout the world who loyally follow his precepts to know God are the Guru's life harvest." It is the disciples who are the Guru's life harvest. There is a story of a guru one time who said, the disciples said, "Master, we want you to write your teachings down in a book. We want you to write all your wisdom there." So he said, "All right." And every day they would watch the master. They never saw him have any paper. They never saw him pick up a pencil or a pen. And so they would ask him once in a while, "Master, are you writing?" "Oh, yes, I'm writing every single day." Well, they were a bit mystified by this, so they even looked closer. Did he have any paper with him? Did he have any pencil, pen? Nothing. "Master, are you writing today?" "Oh, yes, I've been writing all day long." Well, they knew the master wouldn't lie, and yet they saw absolutely no evidence for what he was talking about. Finally, one of the disciples finally had the temerity to say, "Master, we don't see you writing anything. We see no paper, no pens, nothing. How can you say you are writing every day?" And the master said, "I am writing in your hearts, my teachings, my truth, my spirit. And it will be up to you to go out and be my books for all humanity." And so this is the way masters are, that it is the disciples, how they live their lives, the realization that they attain, that is their harvest. There were several of Paramahansa's most advanced disciples at Encinitas at that time. Dr. Lewis, the beloved presiding minister of this beautiful place, gave sermons regularly both here and at the San Diego church. He was a disciple of Paramahansaji since 1920. He and his family lived in the home on the hermitage grounds. There were several SRF ministers then visiting at Encinitas. Some of them had come from distant places to attend the recent convocation at Los Angeles. Among them was Mr. J. M. Coron, center leader from Mexico City. This devoted disciple had translated Master's books and lessons into Spanish and had taught these precepts in Mexico and many countries in South America. Master gave special luncheons for the ministers, and one day, while they were still gathered around the table, he asked me to bring him something, designating where I should find it. When I returned and handed it to him, he opened the small container which held a precious, true relic that had belonged to Babaji. He showed it reverently to each one. After many of the guests had departed, our Guruji planned a picnic with Dr. and Mrs. Lewis, and I was included. It turned out to be a cool and windy day, but this did not deter him nor alter his enthusiasm, for Master loved picnics. He selected an area overlooking the ocean, located on the way up to San Diego. Here the table was set up, folding chairs put beside the parked car, and our meal was soon before us. We had to hold our plates from the wind as we ate the food that Mrs. Lewis had lovingly prepared, and we all happily shared Master's company. Rajasi Janakananda was also at Encinitas. The name was given by Master to Mr. James J. Lin, a disciple who had achieved supreme realization. He spent as much time at Encinitas as his business activities permitted. His advanced state of consciousness was apparent. He radiated happiness to a degree that caused many to seek his blessing. Someone said to me, "One can't describe it, but you can feel the joy when he was near and see it in his face." Paramahansa once wrote of Rajasi that he was a yogi of Himalayan hermitages of the past, who will light the lamp of self-realization in many groping hearts. This prediction has already come true. I once heard Rajasi say, "I follow this path because I am practical, and this is a practical path with which brings results. It is not speculative. Nowhere else could I find a way to achieve the spiritual realization I have sought. The love and joy of God that I feel is without any end." Through the years, I noted that while others talked of truths, he meditated. That while others sought companionship, he dwelt in seclusion. When Rajasi came to visit Master in the mornings, the Guru and his beloved disciple welcomed each other quietly. They discussed varied topics, and there were peaceful silences between them. They were shared by those of us who were present. Those brief encounters left me with a picture of the great rapport which had existed between them for more than 18 years. Sister Gyanamata resided here at Encinitas Hermitage. Master has called her the greatest woman saint in SRF. I can recall long ago at Mount Washington her many duties and details to which she attended. Ever serving, she proved that a saint's life is not escape from responsibilities. None could prevail upon to spare herself. She chose to act to the limit of her ability in serving God and Guru. In her home, the words "God alone" were placed to inspire her own moments there. They have also been an inspiration to others. Her letters to our Guru will be rewarding to any who read and ponder them, for holiness was her way of life. They are printed in many issues of the SRF magazine and may one day appear in book form, which they are today, entitled Book God Alone. One of the many times when Sister Gyanamata was meditating and felt the vibrations of Master's presence bringing intense joy, she wrote him that these spiritual blessings meant more to her than the wonder of vision. Such wisdom. Here, many saw Christ when he lived, did not become disciples, but those who felt this Son of God within their hearts and souls became saints. Sister was making this comparison from her own experience, for she had holy visions in her meditations. When I first saw Master in 1925, I wrote of his smile. She also mentions the beauty of his smiles in one of her letters. She wrote, "My ever-blessed Master, I am told that records are being made of your voice, chanting. I wish that records could be made of the smiles that sometimes flash on your face in response to some secret emotion. The smile you gave me lately was as truly a blessing as a touch of your hand on my head. So God smiles on me through you, Gyanamata." Her name means Mother of Wisdom. It was given to her by Master as at the time she took renunciation vows to become a sister. All the disciples found her a truly wise mother. Our Guru left Mount Washington in her care while he is away in India. Distance proved to be no barrier for his blessings to reach her. When he was abroad, she wrote, "I had the great happiness of feeling the uplifting vibrations of your presence. They grew stronger as the day passed, and at my meditation, I floated in a sea of peace and joy." In another letter to Master, she told her revered guru, "Each time I marvel at the joy and well-being that comes to me when you draw near in spirit. I was visiting Sister Gyanamata for a little while in her room at the Hermitage before I returned to Los Angeles. As I rose to go, she asked that I would carry a message to Master to ask him if he would look up at her window from the car as we drove on our way to Mount Washington that day. I inquired if she wished to have him come to see her before he left. She assured me that she wanted only this. How few would ask so little? Sister knew her guru would respond to any wish she made. My reminder caused Master to stop the car in the grounds. Looking up, one saw her God-consecrated face there, sweetly waiting. He looked long, then lifted his hand in part blessing as we drove on. She was at that time near the closing chapter of her life. So we read about these great, great spiritual beings and that their seeds, their God consciousness that comes to us even now, feeling blessed and uplifted in their presence, and that we take those seeds, we take that blessing, we take that upliftment, and we put it to work in our own life. We feel the inspiration that comes from them. And we take that and we repeat God's name. We keep our mind focused on that. And through that, the mind is purified, uplifted, and changed. Changed, never to be the same again. And we go all the way. Let us make that firm determination so that when we look at this life from eagle's vision and lift it up on high on those wings, that we will know that we fulfilled the true purpose for which we came and that we will feel that full satisfaction of God and gurus, that we have been of some little service at least to them in this lifetime, through the gaining of our own realization and how we have lived our lives. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart bursts with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
I bow to the light within you. I ask God and Guru's blessings that you feel so inspired to keep that God remembrance, that you will be lifted up into those heights of bliss and joy, love and light and realization. You should experience His ecstasy now and always. There is in truth no comparison to any other experience.